Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Percival Everett's new novel, James, is a brilliant, action-packed reimagining of Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. It is both harrowing and ferociously funny, told from the enslaved Jim's point of view. Everett was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, whose novel Erasure is the basis for Cord Jefferson's critically acclaimed film, American Fiction. While many narrative set pieces of Adventures of Huckleberry Finn remain in place, Jim's agency, intelligence, and compassion are shown in a radically new light. The latest is James, and we welcome Percival Everett to this week's book show. Percival, what a great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So let me begin with pointing out something that I think I got wrong in the introduction, and that is, I use the word reimagining. What is the proper word for what you have done here?
Reimagining certainly makes sense. I don't know if that's actually what I was about, but I don't misunderstand someone's reading of this. I am revisiting this world that Twain created, not so much the text, but the world that, through which the characters moved.
What was it about the time and place in your life and in your writing life that you felt that this was something that you wanted to do, that you would want to take on the story in the way that you would take on the story?
Well, like much of artistic creation, I don't know. One morning I was walking, and I actually was on my way to play tennis, and it occurred to me that that I didn't know if anyone had told this story from Jim's point of view. I hadn't been thinking about Huck Finn at all. And after a little research, I could not find any work that had done this. So I decided to do it. It's not something that had been burning in me for a long time, because I hadn't been smart enough to think of it until then.
Once you get the idea, what is the difficulty in writing it, in the sense of the time and of really, I would ask, are there rules that you set for yourself of how you were going to approach it?
Well, I didn't want to merely recast the story to regurgitate it in a way that it was the same story, just from a different point of view. I needed to own the story. And to accomplish that, I read the novel some 14 or 15 times in a row. I would reach the end and then just start at the beginning until it became a blur to me. It's a lot like when you repeat a word over and over until it makes no sense, until it sounds nonsensical. And I did that. I forgot the text, but I knew it. And so I was inhabiting that world instead of the text. And then I did not look at Huck Finn again while I worked on the novel.
What was your original introduction to Huckleberry Finn?
Well, I read an abridged version when I was a kid. I don't remember what made it abridged, what was left out. And I have to say that as an adventure novel, it was fun, but it didn't impress me greatly. I remember not liking Tom Sawyer at all, but there was something about Huck Finn that I was drawn to. And then as a teenager, I did read it again, and I don't know if it was for school or not. But when I read it, obviously, as a Black teenager in America, the presence of that unfortunate word was problematic. At the same time, I recognized Huck as representing a young adolescent America wandering through its own landscape, dealing with that aspect of American history and experience that's become its most defining feature, which is race. So it became an important book for me in that way.
For your telling of the story, did you always know that that word would be a part of your tale?
Well, yes. The word has a real history. It has context. It's a powerful word because we've allowed it to become powerful. But in the historical context, it tells you who you're dealing with. The people who use that six-letter word tell us something when they use it. It's a lot like seeing a sign that says danger.
There are several moments in the novel where Huck is asking Jim about what that means and what it means to be that word, to be a slave, and where Jim James fits into that, as well as where Huck fits into that.
That's the stuff of the world of Twain's Huck Finn, is Huck trying to reconcile the idea that his friend is a property of someone, but at the same time, a human being.
This human being that you write about, you write in the novel, I could see books in front of me. I had read them secretly. This is from James's point of view. But this time in this fever dream, I was able to read without fear of being discovered. I had wondered every time I sneaked in there what white people would do to a slave who had learned how to read. What would they do to a slave who had taught the other slaves to read? What would they do to a slave who knew what a hypotenuse was, what irony meant, how retribution was spelled? I was burning up with fever, fading in and out of consciousness, focusing and refocusing on Huck's face. That tells us, it's early in the novel, and it tells us so much about James versus Jim, right? I mean, that gives us the sense of who he is inside.
Yes, he's a person looking for agency.
How interested were you in having him find that agency, and where and when, and to build to that?
Well, I think the important thing for us to realize is it's not that Jim is finding his agency, it's that the world around him is discovering his agency.
Right.
Slaves were unable to exercise expression of their agency in the world through which they moved. That's the real tragedy of slavery, probably more than the servitude. It's the fact that their humanity was suppressed.
You use the term in the novel, slave filter, and talk a little bit about that, of how that is used within the communication by Jim to others.
Well, not in a way that's so undifferent from the world exists now. In moving through the world, you have to adopt certain masks to survive. It's true of all peoples in all places. In this world, the slaves, if they don't comply with the expectations of their oppressors, they risk danger to life or family. So when they're with white people, they speak in a certain way. They talk, as they call it, slave in the novel. When they talk to each other, they're speaking, at least in the novel, my translation of it is standard English. It's a language that they use that white people will not understand.
The novel is James by Percival Everett, and it is published by Doubleday. Many of the main aspects of the story are included. There are things that are not, and you certainly add much to the story. How did that come to you, and realizing in those multiple readings of Huckleberry Finn, of what you wanted to tackle and what you didn't?
In much of Huck Finn, Huck and Jim are separated. So some of that was quite easy. What was Jim doing while Huck was off having an adventure? So those parts of Huck's world are not present in James. And I had to reimagine what was happening to James during the parts where it was only Huck. And just in creating story, that moves the story forward in a different way, in that I had to imagine how James was seeing the very things that Huck was seeing from a different vantage point. Of course, Huck being a young boy, James being an adult man, a family man, and actually more literate and educated than Huck.
That was something that I thought was so interesting in the book, because I didn't read it that way in Huckleberry Finn, which is that Huck is a kid. I mean, he's a young boy, and really Jim is the person who is caretaking and looking after him.
Jim is the only father figure in the adventures of Huckleberry Finn, though the character is not fully realized, not fully fleshed out, and I don't fault Twain for that. the story was Huck's story, and also Twain was unequipped to write Jim's story.
In looking at the writing of Jim's story, did you always know what you wanted that story to be, of where Jim would end up at the end of James?
Well, I didn't know it from the very beginning, but as I started to construct the world in my head, I knew where I needed to arrive, and it was that conclusion came to me fairly quickly, though I can't say that was the first thing that came to me.
But so much of it is family, right? So much of what drives the character is the return to family.
Oh, yes.
And that's a powerful motivator, of course.
Well, it is, and it underscores the humanity of the characters, but also the difference between Jim and Huck. Huck is from a family that's terribly broken. His father is an alcoholic who beats him. He's nothing like the father figure that James presents to his daughter.
There are moments of violence in this novel, and I'm curious as to what those were like to write about, in the sense that they're I think more violent than what we would have read in Huckleberry Finn, and yet seem very, very much a product of what is happening at the time and what these particular characters are going through.
Yes, and I changed the time of the novel. I move it 20 years later so that I can utilize the fact that the country's about to go to war.
And in that, with that brings the violence, right? It wouldn't have been there otherwise.
I don't know if that's true. I think to some that's possibly true, but I think the world through which James is moving. The world for the slaves is always a violent one.
Right.
Perhaps that's the and a terrifying one. And that's where things get painted a little rosily, I guess, is in a rosy fashion for Twain. At the end of the novel, we fall back into an adventure story when Tom Sawyer is reinserted, and the gravity of slavery that Huck has been dealing with earlier doesn't really come back into play.
I was struck when you said earlier that you were not a big fan of Tom Sawyer, of the character, and Tom Sawyer obviously plays a role in the end of Huck Finn, and he is taken out of the picture here, which is certainly must be fun given that you didn't like the character, but it does say something about I always found him to be lesser. And I'm in Twain's mind, where do you think Tom Sawyer came in as far as to allow us to see more fully who Huck was?
Well, I don't think that figures into Twain's reinsertion of Tom at all. Twain stopped working on Huck Finn for quite a while and then returned to it. And you can actually feel that demarcation in the text. The novel changes. And once he brings Tom back, it might have been, though I'm guessing, for mercenary reasons, his money-making book had been Tom Sawyer. And here he was trying to complete this novel that had given him some trouble. Tom Sawyer comes back. It becomes an adventure novel and an adventure story. And I think quite likely that part of the story is not about Huck as much as finishing the work.
Percival Everett is our guest. The name of the novel is James. In the writing, and I'm interested because you're prolific. I say that as a compliment. And once you're on the trail, did this novel come as easy to you as a novel can?
Well, novels are difficult. Once I knew what I was doing, and I very seldom know what I'm doing, it was just work. It was just a matter of doing it, making all the pages. I'm still waiting for a novel to come easily to me.
I guess that would be nice, and yet there's something to be said for the work that is put in and where that brings you, right?
Well, that's what we tell ourselves.
Make yourself feel better.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. How do you look at this? You have written many novels, and of course, with Erasure and American Fiction, this has really brought a lot of new audiences to your work. This book has brought new audiences to your work. How do you feel about that, and what do you make of it, given the large body of really incredible work that you have?
Well, I'll just tell you. So when I built a studio on my ranch many years ago, and people would come up the drive and ask me if I needed help, and I would say, well, all I can get. And that's how I feel about readership. It's wonderful that I have more readers, and that's all. I'll change that a little. It's wonderful that more people are reading. I don't really care if they're reading my books as long as they're reading some books. And this has been a good year.
What do you think about, after finishing James, or even before, of someone once again, assuming they had read it once, and perhaps like you in school, that you read Huckleberry Finn again?
Well, I think it adds another level of meaning and experience to reading James. It's certainly the case that one doesn't have to read Huck Finn to understand it or to appreciate the story, but the more levels you can create, the better.
When you look at those levels for you and what your work means to you and what it means to take on the next project, how you decide as to what you feel you want to do and what maybe you feel is necessary, if that's apt. I don't know that it is.
I make books one at a time. I don't much think about how they're going to make any meaning in the world, because what I think they mean really has nothing to do with reality. It's not until readers come to it and they do the work, complete the artistic circuit, that any meaning gets made. I'm always curious about what people see there, but I have no stake in it. And I have no proprietary feelings about the meaning.
Where does that bring us of how people, we talk about the people who obviously have come to your work and are reading your work and are praising, rightfully so, your work. And the flip side to that of looking at Huckleberry Finn, which is a classic and yet is so often banned or barred, and how you feel about that and how to look at that as an issue, as certainly being, yes, one of the greatest novels ever written, and yet also one that is the most banned.
People who ban books either haven't read the books or read poorly. There is nothing in Huck Finn that should alarm anyone. It takes education to read it properly.
And how do you define reading it properly?
Or reading it with an eye to the story and allowing the story to make sense in the world in which it happens. To read something that's set in 1850 and not understand that language was different, attitudes were different, current events were different, and to think that language didn't tell people where they stood is naive. Yes, it's hard to read. It's hard to see sometimes. It's hard to witness the brutality, but to make it nice, to make it clean, to make it safe, is to miss the point, is to miss the danger, to miss the tragedy, and to miss the reality of the world through which these oppressed people lived.
When you consider what you have, the story that you have told, and the way that the audience is reacting to it, it does fascinate me of the way that you have written it in the sense of very short chapters. It has a propulsion to it that is so amazing and so just rampant and lovely and beautiful. And was that always the intention and the idea of how to tell the story in a very quick burst, going through the days and hours of going down the Mississippi River?
Well, I was trying to be faithful to the spirit of Twain's novel, which, though, through the period and stylistic changes over these 140 years, he's slightly more verbose than I might be, but it moves, and it moves with great ease through his world, and I guess I was keeping that in mind and trying to protect that spirit of the work.
Having tried to get you on the show before, I know this doing interviews isn't one of your favorite things. I understand that. But it seems like you've changed a little bit on that, that you're more willing to talk about your work.
Well, I think I've gotten a little better at doing it. I don't know how long I'll do it this time. And there's been I have to say, this time there's been a slight change in the interviewers. Like, I'm enjoying talking to you. I'm not complaining about people in the past, but generally speaking, I think interviewers are asking me better questions and are better read, and it's been a little more fun, and maybe it's simply this novel. But I've been enjoying it a little more this time. I tend to be somewhat introverted, but I do like talking about the work.
And I would think that American fiction and what that unleashed had some impact on getting you out more too, right?
Well, the actors were on strike, and so I sort of showed up as a pinch hitter for some of the interviews that they would have been doing. I was a bench warmer, and luckily no one fouled me, so I had to take free throws. But it worked out.
What did you make of the reception to the film, the Oscar, as well as just the overall feelings to the cinematic translation from erasure to American fiction?
Well, I like that you use the word translation, and that's exactly what a move from one medium to another is. Cord Jefferson took my novel, mined it, and took what he needed to make his film. And I like the film very much. It's not my novel. It's not supposed to be my novel. It's a beautiful piece of work that's beautifully acted, and I was very happy to be associated with it.
When you think about the subject that it deals with is something that I think really struck people. And obviously this is I understand the differences, but this is also, I'm assuming, a life that you have of issues that you have dealt with throughout your career.
I have perhaps less so lately than earlier in the career, but it's more addresses stuff I had to deal with as a kid when I was looking for things to read.
Oh, that's interesting. And what did you read as a kid? What satisfied you?
Oh, many things satisfied me. I was one of the army of 13-year-olds who couldn't wait for Kurt Vonnegut's next novel to come out. I'm waiting for my army of 13-year-olds, but it's not coming. I read everything, but when I was looking for black characters as a kid, it seemed that the only thing published were books about the antebellum South and or the inner city, and the black middle class simply wasn't present. Though there were some, great writers around, there were very few. So it wasn't, and it wasn't really the kinds of books that I disliked. It was the fact that there was no range.
No range in character and no range
No range
other.
in representing the black experience.
Right. Has that changed?
It has. There are many fine writers of color working right now, and the work does represent a much wider picture of the world. And even I just was sucked into the language that makes everything wrong. I said the black experience. There is no such thing. There are many black experiences, just like there are many white experiences and many American experiences. And it's that distillation to, it's that idea that they can be distilled to one experience that was so harmful 20 years ago in publishing, and does still exist.
So the gang of 13-year-olds still have something to read and look forward to.
I'm sure they're finding something. It's not me, but I hope they.
The new novel is James by Percival Everett. It is published by Doubleday. Percival Everett, thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you. What fun, and thanks for your attention to the work.
Percival Everett's new novel is James. It is published by Doubleday. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.